Welcome to your Next Mission video podcast. Today we're going to be talking about veterans in the criminal justice system with a former Marine who knows the topic inside and out because he lived it. This man spent 23 years in prison, and while he was there, he founded an organization to help other veterans who have found themselves on the wrong end of the criminal justice system. You'll meet him in just a minute. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Welcome to Your Next Mission video podcast, where we tell the stories of those who have served in the past and those who are serving today. From transition to financial wellness, VA benefits to mental health, we cover issues facing veterans, active military, and their families. Now here's your host, the 12th Sergeant Major of the Army and co-founder of the American Freedom Foundation, Jack L. Tilley.
Hello out there, warriors past and present, your families. Thank you for your service to our great country. Now, before we get started, I personally want to thank our presenting sponsors, Navy Federal Credit Union, whose members are the mission, and Purdue Global, where you can get your comeback with additional sponsorship from Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Dental and Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Vision and USAA. Together, they make your next mission happen. They love our veterans and families, and as I always say, we love them too. Today we're going to be revisit a topic we discussed earlier this year, veterans who end up in the criminal justice system. And I'm excited to introduce Ron Self, a veteran of the United States Marines, who is a founder of and executive director of Veterans Healing Veterans from Inside and Out. Ron, thanks for joining on the show.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it. Well, love your mission.
Well, it's a good mission for all of us because we're talking about veterans. Ron, before we get started, would you tell the audience just a little bit about yourself?
Well, I was in the Marine Corps from 1987, 1997, med boarded out, and found myself in a situation where I ended up in prison with a sentence of 32 to life, and that's where I created the Veterans Healing Veterans from the Inside Out program. That's the short version. how detailed do you want me to go?
Oh, that's Ron. That's probably plenty right there. Yours is a very personal story, but you haven't shed away from telling your story. So, tell us a little bit more. How did you go from there, spending 23 years in prison?
Yeah. So, I should probably back up just a little bit, give a little context. At the age of 6. I went to go live with my grandparents because the family situation, the dynamic at home was volatile. Dad left, mom was having problems. It just seemed better for me to go to my grandparents. Although I was acting out quite a bit because I didn't understand why I wasn't with the family anymore. And my grandfather and my grandmother, wonderful people, loved being there. They didn't put me in. They asked me if I'd be interested in going to military school. So about the age of 6, I went off to Big Sur. And from 6 on up to almost 22, so junior high, high school, college, all that kind of stuff I did up in Big Sur with an experimental program, and it was all military academies. So you're getting the normal education, sort of, but it's very much focused on becoming a military person. For me, the whole idea, the outcome would be I would join the Marine Corps. All the kids in the program, the idea is that we would join the Marine Corps.
Yeah.
That became a reality when I graduated boot camp at MCRD San Diego in 1987, and then went into the Fleet Marine Corps. Best time of my life. As a child, junior high, I wasn't quite sure where I fit in life. When I got to the Marine Corps boot camp, I remember about halfway through it, I remember on one rainy day sitting on our butts. They used to say assholes to elbows, excuse the language, but... And before our training evolution, I remember sitting there in the pouring rain, middle of the night, thinking, I'm at home. I found a home. And I fit in. I loved it. So I spent the rest of my time in the Marine Corps just training and trying to excel to the best of my ability to get to special operations, which I at one point got to that. Throughout the course of my time in the Marine Corps, I obviously, as it happens, I got a lot of injuries. I ended up getting med boarded out with 100%. And within 5 months of that separation, I found myself going to prison. I think the biggest part of that is the EASing part, the separating from the Marine Corps, after spending a better part of my lifetime to achieve a goal, to get to a certain point, to a certain unit, then not be a part of that anymore. It left me with an identity crisis. It left me completely lost, without a mission, without any camaraderie. And I spiraled, literally out of control. How I went to prison, I shot a guy trying to stop him from being killed. I applied every bit of military training I had to that situation so that nobody would get killed. Nobody did get killed. But then the guy that wanted it done ended up killing himself when the guy that he wanted killed didn't get killed. And that just, everything just kind of went to shit.
Yeah.
And I ended up with a sentence of 32 to life for conspiracy to commit murder.
Unbelievable.
Ultimately, I was paroled by the grace of God. It's the only way I can characterize it. Is in California, when you go through a parole board commission, you have three commissioners. And fortunately for me, one of my commissioners was an FBI rated sniper. And he asked all the right questions, and he knew that I wasn't trying to kill somebody. And he just asked all the right questions. I mean, he was on point. Specifically, I fired two rounds at this vehicle. They were 7 seconds apart, and they were in the bottom right corner of the windshield. Now, a sniper, he figured out real quick, wait a minute, you shot once, and you were in the bottom right corner of the windshield, not 10 inches up to the left, which would have been center mass or a headshot. 7 seconds go by, and you put the second round through the same hole. You didn't correct. You aimed again for the same spot you hit. Why did you do that? And I explained it was never my intent to kill Dr. Shoemaker. And he just got this grin on his face, which made me uncomfortable because there were, you know, the DAs in the room and other people were there, the victim's families there. And I'm just thinking, why is this guy grinning? And he's like, I totally get it. And then he started talking about the caliber of the weapon. What caliber weapon did you use? What caliber would you have used had you intended on killing Mr. Shoemaker? And I answered all the questions. And the hearing was about 8 hours. Because ultimately they wanted to know how I ended up on a freeway shooting at somebody. And As I explained to them, I had to go back to when I was 6 years old to answer that question. And the short answer to that question is, would the situation when I left my parents' house resulted because my dad at the age of six kneeled down and said, you were a mistake. You should have never been born. You're the reason I'm going to Vietnam. And he walked out the door and I never saw him again. Well, what that did to me, and it took me all my life to realize in a lot of extensive studying and introspection, what I realized when dad told me I was a mistake, that left within me a desire to seek out older authority father figures that if I worked hard enough, I wouldn't be a mistake. So in my mind, these authority father figures became surrogate fathers. Now in the Marine Corps and in these military schools, there's no shortage of senior NCOs and commanding officers. And when I got to those units, I excelled, and I want to say this very clearly, I excelled in those units in the top 1%, not because I was better or braver than anyone else. I was driven by something most weren't driven by, and that was not being a mistake and wanting to impress the higher ranking people that in my mind I equated to surrogate father figures that I didn't want to let down and I didn't want to be a mistake.
Yeah, it sounds like it sounded like just fitting in, just trying to fit in with a group. Did you have difficult, really, it goes back to just like you said when you're 6 years old, but did you think transitioning out of military played a part in you fitting in and starting that, that path on maybe putting you in the direction of prison again? Do you think that you just didn't fit in when you got out? Huh?
Yeah. I mean, you're part of something. I was part of something bigger than I or most people ever be a part of again, the military. Right. And in there I had structure, I had camaraderie, I had leadership, and we had a code, right? We had all these things. And then it's like, well, here's your papers. Take care.
Yeah. So you're not by yourself
anymore. Yeah. You're not on the call list anymore. Spin ups are happening every day. And you're sitting in your house with a remote control in your hand.
Yeah. I talk to people all the time about the fact that there's a tremendous struggle for us when you get out of the service. You know, you stayed 11 years, I stayed 36 years. And when I got out of the service, I really, struggled about just fitting in, finding the tribe, who do I have to communicate, you know. It was just, it was tough. I'm not sure if you serve in the military for however many years you do serve, if you ever truly fit back in again. The transition from military life to civilian life is tough. And I can't imagine, you know, handle the losing your freedom. You know, that was just, had to be tough.
Well, in a way, there was some comfort. And this is as strange as this may sound, but prison, county jails, just like the military, had structure. You got up in the morning, you ate, you did things, you showered. There was a schedule. There was a hierarchy, a chain of command, so to speak. And in that respect, I fit right in the prison system. I didn't have any problems, per se. It wasn't something that scared me. I'd been in combat before. I'd been in structured environments. This was kind of like going downrange. I immediately found people that were military. In prison, there's a lot of politics, racial politics, prison gangs and whatnot. I avoided all that because I just simply wasn't going to participate in the prison bullshit. I made that very clear from the first day I got there. And I sought out and I found other military people. And those are the people that I tended to gravitate towards, or not tended to, I really did.
Was it a large group of people? Because I know when he was talking to the Colonel Seward, he said there's like 200,000 veterans that are incarcerated at federal, state, and local level. So right. Was there a lot of people that were veterans in the prison that you was in?
What I've found in all the prisons I go to in California and across the states, there's typically 150 to 200 veterans in every prison I go to.
Oh, wow.
And they find each other. And what they do with these individual prisons is they create their own they're called ILTAGs, Inmate Leisurely Time Activity Groups. And their veterans group. So at San Quentin Prison, they have the veterans group of San Quentin. At Soledad, they have the veterans group of Soledad, and so on and so forth. And it's funny because in a lot of ways, those prisoner organized programs have a lot of the bullshit the military has to. You have the chairman, you have the vice chairman, you have the sergeant at arms.
Yeah, you got all those. You got the chain of command right there. Yeah.
And it's just funny because here we got all these guys in prison that all got dishonorably removed from society, trying to tell each other how to behave and wear your hat straight. And you know, it's kind of amusing. But you know, it's military people seeking out like-minded ideology.
Yeah. What can you? I mean, you would think that the people within that was in prison, you talking about 150 or something like that, were some of them officers, non-commissioned officers, seniors, juniors, spent 2 or 3 years in the service? You have any idea what their backgrounds were too?
Oh, yeah, the gamut. You had officers, you had guys. Like one guy just got out not too long ago. He was in the Marine Corps, enlisted, Sergeant Major, 23 years.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Week after he got out, committed a crime, and did another 30 years in state prison.
You know, Colonel Seward's throwing something else to that I thought was pretty. The people that go to the federal prison are usually a little bit older, and the crimes they do are a little bit worse than I guess at a local level or state level. Did you find that to be true? I mean, I can't even imagine. And I would imagine the people that are in prison struggle with the same thing that you struggle with: how to really fit in, how to, you know, where do I fit into society when I, you know, when I got out of the service, I didn't really fit in. And that's what sort of led me down this path to do whatever you did. I mean,
actually, I don't know if maybe that might be backwards or maybe misunderstood. My feeling, not to contradict anything, Colonel, because he's a tactician, he's on point.
Yeah.
My personal experience is, because when I initially got arrested, they held me in the feds for a while. And then at one point they said, okay, you're going to the state prison because that's who convicted you. My experience is you found a higher class of criminal in the federal system, and that in the state system, you found a lot more down and dirty people. I mean, really heinous crimes, murder, rape, child molestation, torture. The state systems typically have less educated people committing crimes, whereas in the feds, you have a lot more white collar and blue collar people. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
So, at least in the state of California.
Ron, when we first started talking, do you feel pretty good about fitting in now? I mean, you're comfortable, you got friends around you and all that other stuff. And my question is going to be to you, when you struggle with anything, who do you go talk to?
You're trying to get me cry, huh?
No. Not the words you got to cry. But everybody has to have somebody to talk to. I mean, you, me, and everybody else. I mean, I think probably what you get, for me, it was over, you know, whatever. But somebody's got to have something, because all of us struggle in life. I don't care who you are, what rank you are.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So
who do you talk to? I've been struggling more the past few months than I ever have in my life.
Yeah.
And honestly, how I navigate that is by going into the prisons and facilitating the program that I created with a few hundred veterans a week that I do the program with in separate institutions. For me, that's my therapy. I get so much from going back into the prison and sitting with the men who are now all wearing blue like I used to wear, because I know exactly what they're experiencing. And they know what it's like coming back in, because I come back. They appreciate it so much. Because most guys that get out are like, there's no way in hell I'm coming back in. I'd love to come and help, but I'll do it from out there. I'm not coming back in here. When I paroled from prison in October 2017, VHV had already been running since 2012. So I literally paroled into a job. And the director of corrections for California cleared the way for me to immediately come right back into prison when I was still on parole to do the program with the guys and continue doing it. So who do I talk to? I talk to the guys inside. Have I recently made an appointment to see a psychologist and a therapist? Yes, because I think it's important that I be able to talk with things outside the groups that are inside. I think you just hit it on the nose, Sergeant Major. I just need to be able to go talk to someone, maybe one-on-one.
Yeah, sometimes you need somebody that's not in your realm of, you know, people you hang around with, talk with, or whether you go to the prison or something. Sometimes you need that personal time to just sit and say, look, just between me and you, here's how I feel, and I just need to talk to somebody and sort of let it off your chest a little bit. Then it makes you just feel better. You know, so that's for doctors.
Yeah, I realized ignore and override doesn't work forever.
No. Well, I always tell people, if you ignore something, it's not going to get any better. You know, you got to address it, fix it, do whatever you got to do. I mean, you hope that things get better with time, but sometimes they don't. Sometimes they just get worse and worse and worse. And so if you ignore it, it's just going to be there tomorrow. It's going to be there tonight. It's going to be there tomorrow morning. So you just got to address it, go straight at it, and try to fix it. Ron, I want to talk about how and why you started Veterans Healing Veterans from the Inside Out. But first, we need to hear from some of the folks who helped make this show possible. And so hold on, we're going to take a quick break.
Okay.
This is Your Next Mission video podcast with me, your host, Jack L. Tilley, 12th Sergeant of the Army. And if you're enjoying this discussion, and I know that you are, please like us. Click on that subscribe button below. And be sure to click on the bell to receive notifications of all of our upcoming video podcast releases. I'll be right back after this word from our presenting sponsors.
You're watching Your Next Mission video podcast, proudly presented by Navy Federal Credit Union, the most trusted credit union owned by members of the military community, serving all branches of the armed forces and their families. Their members are the mission. Learn more at NavyFederal.org. And Purdue Global. You're ready for a comeback, and with Purdue Global, you can do more than take classes. You can take charge of your story, of your career, of your life. Earn a degree you can be proud of and get an education employers respect. Start your comeback at PurdueGlobal.edu. Now back to your host, the 12th Sergeant Major of the Army, Jack L. Tilley.
Welcome back. We're talking with Ron Self, a Marine veteran who is the founder and executive director of Veterans Healing Veterans from the Inside Out. Ron, you actually founded your organization while you were still in prison. What sparked the idea, and how did you do it?
So this kind of leads to what I was talking about, sitting on my butt in boot camp that time, and I had a realization that the Marine Corps was my family. It's the first place that I actually in my life felt that I belonged. Fast forward to me sitting in jail, and what, you know, a lot of things happen when you get locked in a 6x9 space. over and over, and there's no stimulation like a TV or a radio or whatever. You're just locked in a cell. I had a lot of introspection going on, a lot of thinking, and I realized that while I was trying to stop somebody from being killed, and I did do that, how I did it is all I did was bring a tremendous amount of shame to the Marine Corps and the men that I served with. And I feel I let a lot of people down. And just one day, I felt that I, not only did I deserve to be in prison, that I just needed to end my life. So I braided a rope, attached it to the locker, and I hung myself. Obviously, I'm here talking to you now.
Looking at
my watch in about 5 minutes of this hanging there, thinking, damn, it doesn't take this long on TV. and then I passed out. I woke up 45 minutes later. The rope had broke. Have no idea how it broke. I've made hundreds of ropes, but this rope broke. So I was laying there on the floor. And oddly, the cells at San Quentin have bars. There's no doors. And so for 45 minutes, I was laying on the floor with this rope around my neck. And people walking by, people just don't notice or don't care. I don't know. But I woke up, took the rope off, didn't have another rope. And it occurred to me that instead of ending my life, maybe I should try and do something to stop people like myself from making the same poor choices I did to remain relevant. Because when I left the Marine Corps, I did not feel relevant or connected to anything anymore. And I was desperately trying to find a way. I found an inappropriate way to be relevant. And obviously that landed me in prison. I was fortunate that San Quentin was one of the only prisons at the time that had a higher quality education program going. At the time, it was Patton College. It's now Mount Tamalpais College. When I say higher quality education, what I mean is your credits are transferable to Berkeley, Harvard, Stanford, wherever. It's that kind of education. And so I was there. I just go ahead and keep going to college. And I enrolled in the college program there. And in the English 204 class, they allowed me to keep repeating the English 204 class. And each semester, I did a 15 to 25 page paper on different segments of the curriculum I was creating for this program. So the first one I did was on PTSD. The second one was narration therapy, then moral injury, then resiliency inoculation training, so on and so forth. I compiled this curriculum that I created. I sent it off to the American Psychiatric Association. They sent it back and said, this is good, but you need to do a pilot program. So I approached the staff at San Quentin Prison, the warden, the community resource manager, and I asked them if I could do this program. And they said, oh, hell no, absolutely not. This is mental health you're talking about. We have doctors for that. Yeah. You're an inmate. You're not creating a program to do mental health. Yeah. And then one of them pulled me aside and said, look, if you call this education, then that's different. So we named it psychoeducation. So we put in there all the little things about when PTSD got its formal recognition in 1980, largely due to Vietnam Veterans of America and mental health, all this fancy talk that made it educational. And then I was allowed to do a pilot program. So within a year of that pilot program, the end of the first year of the pilot program, there were 28 guys that went through the program at San Quentin Prison. Every one of them was seeing a psychologist at the prison. Every one of them stopped seeing psychologists at the prison and reported they were getting nothing from the psychologist and their problems were being met by going to this group. CDCR Mental Health got wind of that and they said, hey, one, we're going to go ahead and support you doing this. Two, we want to fund this program of yours for replication at other prisons. And three, will you teach us how to do it? And I said, absolutely to all of that. So then I had to hire an executive director, become a nonprofit, because as a prisoner, I can't receive hundreds of thousands of dollars from the state when I'm a ward of the state, a prisoner.
should have, though.
They said, you can have to. Yeah, so I created this program. And what I did was I created a program that I felt would have helped me make better choices and identify things before I left the military. I also felt this would help reduce the number of suicides among veterans that left the military and felt, as I did, a loss of identity and a loss of purpose. Yeah. And that's what this program is about.
Yeah. First of all, hats off to you for creating a problem. I'm going to go back and say that one thing that, when you talked about hanging yourself and that rope broke and the only one you ever, I believe in God. So I think God meant for you to do what you're currently doing.
That's what everybody's telling me.
It must be true if you're talking about it didn't work. My luck, I don't know. But, yeah, you're in the right place. You're doing the right thing. And the other thing is really cool is that you're helping a lot of people that struggle. I talk to people all the time about why don't we do a better job in educating people about their transition out of the military, about what they're going to go through, especially if you go to war. If you go to war and come back, the kind of things you do in war, and a lot of us don't talk about them. I think talking about it is a part of healing. And if you're open about it, that's good. But a lot of people keep it to themselves and they don't say anything about it. So I think that's the healing part, especially for me and a lot of other guys I talk about all the talk with quite frequently. But it's a great program. My hat's off to you for doing it. The other thing though is hopefully they're funding you correctly. So you are making a little additional money now to keep moving in life in the right direction. Ron, what are the goals? The goals with the veteran healing. What goals do you have on your program for veterans inside of that?
One, I would like to aim and reduce the number of suicides among our people that are separating from the service. That's the priority. That has always been my priority. Secondly, I really want to get upstream of the problem of guys becoming justice involved. And that's where people like Jim Stewart and the CCJ come into play. And, you know, on that commission, they have Leon Panetta, Chuck Hagel, General Corelli, some heavy hitters. And they're currently creating drafts of documents to create and change policy that will help better address how people leave the military to get that, what you're talking about. Now, you know, I'm sure you're aware they have the TAPS program, transitional assistance program. Mm-hmm. And to the man and woman I've talked to, it's death by PowerPoint. About the only thing they get out of that is a resume. And to be fair, and you know, let's be fair, the TAPS program was never meant to be a resocialization program. It's about checking the box before someone leaves as far as, you know, you have your dental, did you turn in your weapon, blah, blah, blah. It's never been a resocialization. And for me, that's what I'm pushing. I'm pushing that there needs to be a boot camp out type process, an actual process that's as vigorous as the boot camp I went to joining the military. There needs to be something similar for people leaving. That's my belief.
Yeah.
And everyone that I've talked to that I work with feels the same way.
Yeah. I'm not going to disagree with it because I think everybody's a little bit different. I think
absolutely.
You got to find your path, what makes it. But I think what they need to do, again, going back to our educational program within the military, is start that process in the officers and education program. The problem you have, though, is 90% of the people that come in the military only stay 3 or 4 years.
Right.
And only 10% stay, you know, like me, 36 years or 20 years or 25 years. Do veterans who are incarcerated face any different challenges than the general population? I'm sure they do. What's the additional challenge that veterans, face?
You know, that's a difficult one. The challenge they face is having been a part of something that most people in society were not a part of, which is where that brotherhood and that camaraderie comes from. At the same time, while you're in, you're cussing the very organization you're a part of. And then when you get out, you want to go back to it because you miss it so much. I think it's quite the opposite for incarcerated people. Incarcerated people have things available to them that the non-veteran community in prison don't have. They have transitional housing. They have monetary benefits. They have the ability to go to food banks that are sponsored specifically for veterans. In my opinion, in my experience, there is no good reason for a veteran that paroles from prison to recidivize and go back to prison. There's too many things in place for that veteran to survive and make it. And I think that's why I've had a 0% recidivism rate since 2012, because I make sure that what's going on emotionally gets addressed, and then their physical needs when they get out also get met. Everything that they need, every dot that needs to be connected gets connected so that they'll thrive and survive, whereas non-veterans don't have any of that. So I don't know that veterans have it any more difficult than non-veterans. I think we have it better than most because we have the things available to us because of our service. Now, what I have seen that's incredibly difficult is discharge status. If you have an honorable discharge, you're good to go. If you have an OTH, you're good to go for transitional housing with the VA and HUD-VASH. If you have a bad conduct discharge, you got nothing coming. So you're in that category with the people that didn't serve in the military because you have nothing coming.
The one thing about the bad conduct discharge, it stays with you for the rest of your life. I mean, just said, you just don't put you out of the military. It quite frankly, it ruins your life. And I was talking to the Colonel Stewart here not too long ago, and I said, well, wait a minute. You know, at 18, 19 years old or 20 years old, we make bad decisions. And how much should we hold that person to that, you know, dishonorable discharge for the rest of their life? Should we ruin their life for that bad decision they make? I don't know if we should or shouldn't, but I think we ought to take a hard look at something like that, because we're ruining, you know, I think, I don't know the actual number, but I'm guessing, I think 1 year I did check, and I think just for the Army, I think we put out 4,000 people, you know, that came in, didn't adjust, because the Army's just a lot bigger. I mean, 1.3 million people. So that's 4,000. I don't know how many of them was discharge with any kind of dishonorable discharge. Usually it's, if you get a dishonorable discharge, you certainly have did something bad.
Significant.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think they ought to go back every so many years and try to take a hard look. For example, if you went AWOL during Vietnam, or if you went AWOL during any period of time, I don't know what kind of discharge you probably got, less than honorable discharge out of the military. It's just something that we ought to, you know, don't think about just today. Think about 20 or 30 or 40 years down the road, and how does that affect that family? Now, again, it depends on the crime. If the crime's bad enough, then it is what it is.
Absolutely. Yeah. I was fortunate I had an honorable discharge. And frankly, that could have gone a different way, because I wasn't completely separated from the military when my crime happened.
Yeah.
They could have put me out. I'm 100% service connected now. I utilize the medical services regularly. Everything from dental to all the physical injuries I have, I am so blessed, and I realize that, and I hear exactly what you're saying, and I agree with it 100%. You know, there's one thing I noticed in California: of the 6,900 veterans we have scattered throughout 32 prisons, 2/3 of those are Vietnam era veterans, and of those 2/3, over half of them are men of color.
I tell you, I'm a Vietnam veteran. I would tell you, when I came back from Vietnam, I was going to say it a minute ago, when I came back from Vietnam, I was angry. I was really angry. And I struggled real hard about, it wouldn't take much to set me off. And I struggled real hard with that. And I don't know when, but I finally figured out, you know, I got a problem. And I sort of, you know, I'd start slowing myself down, trying to pull back a little bit. If somebody say something to irritate me, I'd try to just ignore it and just keep going. But I can see during that period of time in Vietnam, a lot of people come back, and this country was, you know, nobody wanted us to be in Vietnam, and they'd yell at you or spit at you and do all sorts of things. So it affected my attitude. In fact, most of the guys, when they came back to Vietnam, they'd tell you, don't wear your uniform anywhere. You know, don't
I've do heard anything. That.
Don't show your uniform. Be careful. I got to tell you a quick story. I was a body escort coming back from Vietnam. And I went to Oakland there, and I had to wait for the remains to be there. And I went down to a bar, and I really, quite frankly, had come out of my jungle uniform. That's all I had. And I went and got me a drink. And when I was getting a drink, this guy sort of started jumping all over me a little bit, saying some shit. And so I'm not sure how it was going to work out. There was a guy that was, I guess, was playing pool or doing something. All of a sudden, this guy seen what was going on, and walked over there and took the stick and boom, whacked it on the table, and said, "Leave him alone." That's it.
Well,
I mean, so yeah. So it's a struggle for anybody from any war to fit in. But I think those guys from Vietnam really paid the price. And I didn't know about the men of color. I had no earthly idea. I've never really checked that out. But I also tell you that it doesn't surprise me. White, black, whatever, brown, coming back, they just struggle so much to fit back into society. And our country, quite frankly, didn't do a whole lot to help us. You know, they just sort of said, yeah. And I'm going to say one more thing. We'll take a quick break. One of the other things that you said at the beginning is, when I went in the military, I raised my hand and said, I'll protect and defend the Constitution of the United States. And you did too. Yes. And the fact of the matter is, I'm willing to die for your freedoms. And I think sometimes people forget about that. Whether or not I struggle and I'm in prison, I have a medical issue, I don't fit in, I think we need to do a better job about educating this country about what we've given And you know, I'm going to make sure you give everything you can to help us to make sure. And I think there's probably a lot of people that may be incarcerated in some of our prisons that probably, I'm sure, shouldn't be there because of they made a mistake and maybe they ought to take a hard look at it. I want to talk with you about your work in the Veterans Justice System or Commission. But first, we need to take, as always, need to take another quick break. Okay. Ron, stay right there. I'll be right back.
You got it.
Now, here's a word from two more of the organizations that helped this show be possible.
You're watching Your Next Mission video podcast, brought to you in part by Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Dental, Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Vision.
Part of transitioning out is that dental and vision insurance breaks off from your medical insurance.
Vision and dental is very important to be able to enjoy your retirement.
Blue Cross Blue Shield makes a transition so much easier.
And USAA.
A promise is a trust not to be broken. Whether spoken with an oath or sealed with a pinky. And after 100 years, we're still taking care of the military community and their families. That's our mission, always.
Now back to your host, the 12th Sergeant Major of the Army, Jack L. Tilley.
Welcome back. We're blessed to be here today with Ron Self, U.S. Marine veteran, who is the founder, executive director of the Veterans Healing Veterans from the Inside Out. Remember, this is your show. Tell us about your transition. Tell us what topics you'd like to have. I always say it's not my show. It's our show. It's your show. Tell us what you want us to talk about. You can call or text me at 844-424-1134. Send me an email at smatilly@yournextmission.org. And guess what? I'll actually reach back out to you. Ron, just a few minutes ago, we was talking about the commission. Could you talk a little bit about what we just said, just a couple of minutes, taking a break? I don't want to forget that thought. Go ahead.
I talked about the 2/3 of the guys in the California system that are Vietnam-era veterans, and the other third, there's a few Gulf War veterans, but it's predominantly the other third of those, of that 6,900 are Iraqi and Afghanistan veterans, and they all have traumatic brain injury.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, it's not a uncommon thing. Most have traumatic brain injury. They're diagnosed with it when they come in. Their VA paperwork states they have PTSD, traumatic brain injury, and it shows. I mean, cognitively, it shows. And that, to me, that's a failure not only by the justice system, but again, by the military for not, they're trying to correct it with the veterans courts that they have right now. And the Veterans Justice Commission, under the umbrella of the CCJ, is exploring different policy changes that would ensure that veterans don't slip through the cracks of the justice system, that they get dealt with as veterans, as they should, before they get sentenced, and taking into account their military service. And does the military service play in any way into what they did? Now, in California, there's been several legislative bills that have passed recently that if you can demonstrate that you have been diagnosed with PTSD at the time of your crime, they'll go back and look at that and see how much that contributed to your crime. And is there a better way for you to pay your penance, so to speak, than sitting in prison doing nothing?
Yeah. They got a lot of veterans courts out there now. I don't know if you deal with them all. I know we talked a little bit about that. We have some down in Florida. I think it's like, I'm going to say 30, but I don't think that's correct. But we have quite a few down in Florida, the veterans court system.
There's quite a few. And one of the things that the Veterans Justice Commission was able to identify, and one of the members of it, you should talk to her, Andrea Finley at the VA Palo Alto. She's one of the, I think, 5 statisticians within the whole organization of the VA. Every veterans court is different, and that's a problem. No one is the same. There's no real guidelines. It's a crapshoot, and that's not a good way to run something that's intended to help identify issues when everyone's doing it differently. There needs to be guidelines. It's never been studied, and I believe she got a grant to study the actual veterans courts. So there's a lot of work, in my opinion, that needs to be done, but that is one of the things that the commission is looking at and making recommendations for policy change on how veterans courts are run and, how they're administered.
Well, they need to standardize it. You know, they need to make sure that all the standardize. I don't know if you can't standardize everything. But it was really interesting to me when I went to, I went to one and listened to what they was doing. And they had doctors and counselors. I mean, they had all the people. In fact, what I tried to do is when I was there is I have some guys that work with me. We work with Purdue University and a company called Wiley. They got a bunch of schools, colleges. We tried to put an educational program in there to try to help veterans get, if they have, if they did not have their education, help them a little bit with their education, either education or get certified in a specific field. Hey, you know, we had Colonel Stewart was on there, and you may answer this question already, the Justice Commission on the show, and he talked about the challenges the country's making since our veterans in the criminal justice system to make sure they're all taken care of. Do you think they're being taken care of in the justice system there? I mean, are we taking care of most of them? Or
this is important. Thank you for asking that. I would say initially the answer to that question was no. Now, having been participating and looking at and being a participant in the Veterans Justice Commission, they're absolutely making changes. They're not just creating a report that's going to sit on a shelf that nobody reads, and that's that. They're actually making policy changes. They're coordinating efforts nationally. There's a lot of network connecting going on, and there are definitely changes that are being made. This is not a for-naught commission. They're doing what they're supposed to be doing, and they're actually helping make the policy changes.
Yeah. Go ahead.
No, they just released a report just recently on some of the changes that are being made.
Yeah. Ron, are you, when you listed all the people that, and they're all senior people that are on the commission.
Oh, yeah. I'm the only knucklehead there.
I was just going to ask, is there anybody else that served in prison that's on the commission? I mean, because it seems to me, I mean, it's like being in the Marine Corps. I can't tell you what the Marine Corps is like unless I've walked in your boots. And nor can you tell me about the Army unless you walked in my boots, right?
Yeah.
And so it's hard for me. Yeah, go ahead.
There's a young lady named Carla Bug. She's a female veteran. She is on the commission. She's been on the commission as long as I have. We were the first initial only two they had formerly incarcerated people, along with all these high-ranking generals, everybody else. And now we're wrapping up. We're finishing up the last cycle of the commission, and they have brought a couple more formerly incarcerated people on.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a good idea. In fact, it probably ought to be 30-70. You know what I mean? I have a lot more because I tell you the truth. I mean, I don't know how to help you unless I know what your issues are. And again, if I haven't walked in those boots, you know, it's hard to, and I'm assuming that they all have a lot of really good input to tell them what life is really like behind. I mean, I was telling the guys I work with here the other day, when I was a kid, I got in trouble, spent a few months in reform school, not federal prison or state prison, but I stayed in reform school, but they locked me up one time, a little box, just big enough for a light and a sink I couldn't turn on, a toilet I couldn't flush, and a steel floor I laid on. And I told myself on that day I'd never go back to anything like this. I mean, it sort of slapped me into reality. And I think I must have been 12 or 13 years old. I wasn't very old. But it's something like that. We need to tell people more about what's going on in criminal justice when it comes to veterans and how they're being treated and what we should do to make it better for them. I assume that you have a lot of input. I mean, we're probably able to answer this too, but do they listen to what you're saying and respond? But they listen to what you're saying to implement some of the things, ideas that you're talking about.
Yeah. And let me be clear, and I hope I don't sound over authoritarian on this one.
Yeah.
When it comes down to what happens in the prison, how veterans feel, and what the fixes are and are not, what I say, frankly, is beyond contestation. I don't care how many stars you have on your shoulder. I don't care if you're Secretary of Defense. I don't care who you think you are.
Good.
If you haven't slept in there for 23 years and seen firsthand what's going on, then just sit there and listen, because that's what I'm here for, to explain it to you, not for you to explain to me what you think it is. I'm here to tell you what it is, because I lived it. And frankly, I don't want to be tooting my horn, but I have created, to my knowledge, the only veteran program that exists in the prison system nationally that has succeeded to the level with which we have. And that's not because of me. It's because of what the men are doing inside the program, the curriculum. It works. It 100% works. it's not me saying we have a 0% recidivism rate. It's the parole department for California that's saying that. And I love that because it's not self-serving. It's self-serving if I say it, but if CDCR is saying it, it means something different. So what we're doing works, and I know how to do what we do to help reduce the number of suicides and the recidivism rate. But more importantly, that's all great doing that. Now that we've got a handle on the recidivism rate, people getting out, coming back, and people killing themselves, let's get way upstream of the problem. To get way upstream of the problem, we have to do a better job of EASing and separating these people when they leave the military.
Yeah.
We just have to do that.
Ron, are they taking your program and, you know, is it a national program? You just talk about state of California. Is it just in the state of California that what you're doing? Or are you trying to move that nationally?
We went to a Sterling Correctional Facility in Colorado. I've been there for about 3 or 4 years, and I'm looking at going to Texas and Arizona next. What I have to do, though, is scale myself. I was partnered with an organization not too long ago for about 5 years after I got out, kind of like helping me along because I just got out. We dissolved that relationship. VHV is now its own 501. We're doing our own thing. So I'm not rebuilding, but I'm establishing things a little bit differently than I had when I was in a partnership. I'm a bit more hands-on when it comes to the finances, the people that we hire, so on and so forth. I really want this program to be around long after I'm gone from it. Yeah. That's the true test of a real program.
Absolutely. Hey, Ron, in your opinion, what's the single biggest issue the commission is facing? I mean, they do a lot of good stuff with your help and with a lot of other people, but what's the single biggest?
It's the bureaucracy that we made in the United States. It's the whole political system. It's the layers. To say that the political, how it works in D.C., you know, it's like layers of an onion. It's just, you keep
just
peeling,
keep
it,
peeling
it
back.
It just, it just never stops. And the more you peel, the more you cry. It's just like, oh my God. But again, having said that, having some of those guys like Leon Panetta, Chuck Hagel, General Crowley, General Stewart, several other generals, General Mack, General Ink. I mean, I can't name them all off, but the collection of people, the heavy hitters that they assembled, they're cutting through a lot of the muck and they're getting right to the top and they're talking to the right people in Congress at the Hill.
Well, you got a lot of, very important people that know how to push that, you know, that rock down the road there. The other thing is, I know you got a couple of enlisted guys in. I know you got Al McMichael and Vince Patton in there from the Coast Guard and Marine Corps that are in there too. But that's really important. Yeah, absolutely. Good guy. Good friends of mine too. You know, this, first of all, let me thank you for the program that you started, what you're currently doing with the commission and all the recommendations and changes that you're working. This has just really been great just talking to you. Ron, I'm glad you joined us today for a lot of reasons. One is you tell it like it is. You're putting the word out there to help other people, and that's what we want to do is help as many people as we can, our veterans, especially the ones. I mean, when they told me that there's over 200,000, I think the actual number was, incarcerated in our country, I said, that can't be true. But it is true.
It
and
is.
So if there's 200,000 people there, then what, you know, what are we doing wrong? What do we got to do right? What do we got to fix? And I think you're going in the right direction, and there needs to be, certainly needs to be more people like you that are making a difference. And so I just say, you know, from this old soldier, I'm not a Marine, so you can't call me a Jarty, but from this old soldier, thank you for what you're doing. You're making a difference, and you ought to be proud of yourself, and I'm proud of your all the things that you've done. Because again, I tell people all the time, you can sit on your butt and not do anything. Or you can stand up and make a difference in life. And that's why, you know, that's why you're on this earth to make a difference, and you're making a difference. Any final thoughts, anything that maybe we didn't talk about that you want to share with the audience?
You know, there is one nasty little subject that nobody's really talking about, is that's veterans that are involved with sex offender cases. It's a huge number. It's a number of people don't want to talk about. They don't want to acknowledge it. And more importantly, what do you do with these guys when they parole? Because they're all going to parole. And the restrictions on housing for them is limited. It has to be in outlying communities. There can't be any more than six in one area. It's something to think about. It's something we can't not think about for too much longer.
Yeah.
And that's really all. That's all I would say.
Well,
it's a segment that's kind of ostracized, understandably so, sex crimes.
Yeah.
Having said that, some of these sex crimes are a 21-year-old hooking up with a teenager, and next thing you know, he's got a life jacket as a sex offender, and his life is done as far as employment, Megan's Law, and all these things. It's one segment that it still needs addressing, I think.
Well, I'll tell you that a lot of times it could be somebody's 19 and she's 17. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
I mean, so it's so you got, I always say you got to have a little common sense in some of the stuff. And I think sometimes we have laws and stuff, but that's a guide. You know, you got to make a little bit, you got to make some common sense decisions sometimes. And it's not, you know, everything's not black and white. You got to sort of look in there and find out exactly
those numbers you just said, 17 and 19. We have that with an Army guy who's in a level 3 prison here in California. He's in one of our VHU groups right now. The parents pushed the issue. He got convicted of a sex offender, statutory rape because of the age thing. And now he has a jacket for life, and he's got to be on Megan's Law for life. And this guy's a baby himself. And here's the kicker. They're married. They got married.
Oh, that's crazy. You know, the reason I said that is because when I was a kid in high school, there was a guy I knew got in the same problem at 19 and 17. And he got in trouble for that too. I'm not sure whatever happened to him, but I know that they was after him. That's a long, long, long time ago. So anyway, hey, Ron, thanks for coming on the show. And again, thanks for what you're doing and you're making a difference. And if I can ever help you personally, just give me a holler. I'm an easy guy to get a hold of.
Appreciate the message, Sergeant Major. I appreciate you giving me a voice and a platform. And anything I can do, I'm always here.
All right. God bless. Have a good one.
You too.
Thanks to Ron Sell for being with us today. I'm Jack Tilley, 12th Sergeant Major of the Army. You've been watching Your Next Mission video podcast, and thank you for joining us today. Log on our website at yournextmission.org and leave me a review. I always say, oh, it's a good review, but it's a bad one. I can take that too. While you're there, you can visit our nonprofit and corporate partners who have jobs and services available that can assist you in your transition from the military. And we just added a new job board in partnership with Recruit Military, where you can search for a job that's just right for you. Check it out. Check out this video on our website to learn how to fine-tune your search. You can also create your own individual profile. Scan a QR code and scan the QR code on the website to create your own profile. All information collected is confidential and won't be shared with anyone. Please know, we want to assist you any way we can. I always like saying that twice. Please know, we want to assist you any way we can. You can follow me on all my personal social media pages, Facebook, X, Instagram, YouTube, LinkedIn, and Rumble. And if you like what we're doing with Your Next Mission, click on that subscribe button below. And don't forget to click on the bell too to receive notifications about upcoming video podcasts. Please know, we want to hear from you. Please leave me a message or send me a text at 844-424-1134 or send me an email at smatilley@yournextmission.org. Thanks again for Ron Self for joining us today. It was just great having him on the show and sharing his story, telling the truth about what really is going on. You know, today, when you talk about veterans incarcerated, you know, it's 200,000. There's got to be an issue there. There's got to be something. We got to take a hard look at what these issues are and make changes that help our young adults and our old adults out. You know, going to wars is not easy. Seeing the kind of things that some of these men and women have seen would probably turn your stomach. But we can't ignore them. Bad news doesn't get better with time. If you see an issue, if you see a veteran that's struggling, reach out and help them. Talk to them, listen to them. See what you can do and make a difference. And remember, veterans need to make sure that they help veterans anytime they get a chance. Don't just sit on the couch. Do something. Make a difference. And again, thanks for watching. Thanks to New Mind Studios and, of course, our sponsors, Navy Federal Credit Union, Purdue Global, Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Dental, and Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Vision, and USAA. We appreciate all you do for our military. And as always, see you on the high ground. Hoo-ah!
You've been listening to Your Next Mission, brought to you by the American Freedom Foundation. Learn more by visiting yournextmission.org.